The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Yeah, Jermaine's been awesome, man. He's, I feel bad for him because he kind of gets lost in the shuffle of the four picks that we had that get celebrated. It's Sauce and Garrett and Breece, but Jermaine's playing at a Pro Bowl level. He is, he's disruptive. He changes games. He gets after the quarterback. He's awesome in the run game. Playing through so much pain right now. He had that first year where he was kind of hidden behind a really good D-line, and he had an unbelievable offseason, put in a lot of work, and it's so cool just to watch a young man who put in the work that he needed to in the offseason to reap the rewards of his labor. But he's doing a great job, grossly underrated in my opinion, but he's going to be good for a long time.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast live. We are live reacting to the Tennessee Titans trading Tavondre Sweat. Plus, they cut Lloyd Cushenberry and Xavier Woods yesterday. We haven't had a chance to react to that. And at the end of this live stream, we're going to talk about the potential rebrand that has been announced and is coming on March 12th. But first, right off the bat, I'm your host, Justin Graver. Joining me, as always, Justin Mello. Justin, the Titans traded Tavondre Sweat amidst weeks of speculation. Does Tavondre Sweat fit in the Titans' defense? A lot of people said, yeah, he fits in. He's a good defensive tackle. You need those in any defense. If you can't make him fit, you're not a very good coach. A lot of other people said, well, yeah, he might fit in the defense, but does he fit the locker room? Does Mike Borgonzi like him? And then some other people said, no, he doesn't fit in this defense at all. He's not going to be on this roster. Well, here we are, one day after I said Tavondre Sweat's roster moves to be determined on yesterday's show, Justin. The Titans, we wake up this morning to a tweet. Well, I guess I was awake, but we wake up this morning and Tom Pelissero breaks the news. Trade. The Titans have agreed to send nose tackle Tavondre Sweat to the Jets for defensive end Jermaine Johnson. Check off massive need filled by adding an edge rusher, but do you create another hole by removing a starting defensive tackle? Justin, how's it going? What was your reaction?
Well, I guess not totally shocked, because over at Titan Sized, we had an article a couple weeks ago about Tavondre Sweat potentially being on the trade block once Robert Saleh became the head coach. You know, we thought that was well within the realm of possibility. I was of the opinion, I know not everyone agreed, but I was of the opinion that he was not a great fit in Robert Saleh's defense. In fact, I mentioned yesterday at the Combine that I thought it was a sign that not enough people mentioned when they asked Robert Saleh about players he's coached, you know, of that size and a profile. Everyone's like, oh, look, he mentioned Al Woods. But I'm like, okay, he struggled to come up with one example in like the 10 years that he's been overseeing defenses. He came up with one example, and it was a back-end rotational player who's a minimum veteran type of player. So I didn't think that was some telltale sign that he likes Tavondre Sweat. And guess what? Everything he said about him and everything Mike Borgonzi said was BS, because they traded him 20 hours later. The trade was probably already in the works.
That's what, right? I was going to say. It's so funny. He goes up there at the podium. Tyler of Locked On Titans asks him about Tavondre Sweat's fit in the defense. And he starts talking about how he's got Al Woods and all the stuff you just said. Meanwhile, Borgonzi's like on the phone behind the curtains talking to Darren Mooji about trading him. That just goes to show a couple of things. Number one, the power of the combine. And I mentioned it on Tuesday's show, but these guys go out, they get drunk together, they start talking about stuff, ideas start forming, and movement happens. You mentioned in 2016 when the Titans traded the number one overall pick to the Rams that John Robinson admitted all those conversations started at the combine. So number one, the power of the combine. Like once this starts happening, everything starts happening. And we've talked about how next week's going to be a big week for roster moves. Obviously, the Titans getting a head start on that with what they did yesterday, making this trade today. But the second thing to take away from it is that these guys don't ever tell you the truth. They are never going to go up to the podium and tell you the honest truth. If Robert Saleh had got up there and asked about it and been honest, he would have said, oh, yeah, you know, we're actually working on moving Sweat, so stay tuned. Maybe today or tomorrow he's not going to be a Titan anymore. Like, he's obviously not going to do that. So I think it's crazy news just in the sense of how shocking it is timing-wise. Like, we weren't expecting a trade right now. But when you look at what they actually did, it does make sense for a lot of reasons. And the number one reason is filling a massive hole. Before we talk about Jermaine Johnson, I do want to let us both sort of share our theories on where it went wrong with T'Vondre Sweat. First of all, this is another Rand Carthon addition that Mike Borgonzi has kicked off the roster within a year. So that, or a year plus, like a year and a month maybe. But that shows you right there that we've talked a lot about that. Mike Borgonzi didn't like what Rand Carthon had done to this team. And my personal feeling is that T'Vondre Sweat on the field is a perfectly fine fit for the defense. Maybe he's not the prototype. Maybe he's not the ideal player that Robert Saleh would build in a lab to play defensive tackle for him. But he's a good player. He can do all the things Robert Saleh said he can do on Tuesday, get numbers to numbers, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think he fits what Borgonzi wants to build in the locker room. This is a Jarvis Brownlee trade all over again, except that you got an actually decent to possibly good to possibly very good player out of it. And I do think that we've heard these rumors since T'Vondre Sweat, since the year T'Vondre Sweat was drafted at the combine, when it was like T'Vondre Sweat has character concerns and attitude and work ethic, and they're like, teams aren't sure about him. And Rand Carthon wrote all that off. I wrote all that off because hook 'em, I still like T'Vondre Sweat, and it's sad. A sad moment for me as a Texas fan, but Titans come first here. And then at the trade deadline last year, all kinds of rumors. Is T'Vondre Sweat going to be moved? T'Vondre Sweat, lots of interest in T'Vondre Sweat. He doesn't get moved. But when you have that much of a paper trail of little reports about things in the locker room, things off the field, not like bad person off the field, not like going to get arrested for domestic violence and then like run from the cops and then be facing like a maximum 70-year sentence like James Pierce Jr., not that kind of bad off the field issues. Just
they
like
have a DUI before the draft, though. I know that's different, but
that's true. No, that's true. He did get that DUI before the draft, and that's like, I mean, that's sort of what it is, though, right? It's like, are you all in, dedicated to football, Jeffrey Simmons level, Cam Ward level? That's the kind of culture they're trying to build in the locker room. This is obviously just my theory, but I think that T'Vondre Sweat said, "I'm massive and pretty athletic for my massiveness. I can just get by on this." And I don't think that I know we talked about how much he wants to go work out with Jeff in Dallas. I do wonder if that's still going to happen. Probably, right? Guys stay friends on other teams and work out with guys from other teams in the offseason all the time. But that's my theory. I don't think it's about on the field fit, and people can have that discussion all they want. To me, when the breadcrumbs are as many as there are about his off-field character stuff, and again, not like serious, but just culture building stuff, I think you can believe that because that's what they're telling us.
Yeah, I mean, first off, shout out to Lemdos here for the super chat tip. $4.99. How do you feel the hole in your heart from losing a Texas product? Obviously directed at you, Graver. He's just going to have to cope, Lemdos. Good move by Borgo. Look, I don't want to spend too much time sort of speculating on the reasoning as Graver kind of learns how to operate a computer for the first time. I don't want to spend too much time really speculating. Funny. On what, you know, was it on field? Was it off field? I think it's probably safe to assume it's a combination of both. You believe whatever your heart tells you to believe, again, whether that was off field or on field. I want to spend more time focusing on what this actually means for the Tennessee Titans. And I've got so many thoughts. Please feel free to interrupt if you'd like at some point. But Edge, obviously a huge need for the Titans heading into this offseason. You've partially addressed that now by getting Jermaine Johnson. I don't think you've fully addressed it. I mean, I said during the offseason, or I said earlier, you know, this offseason, that they would need to go out and get multiple edge rushers this summer. They've now gotten one. They still need more. So that doesn't change. And maybe we'll get into this discussion. You know, I'll flesh this part of it out a bit later. But I don't think this takes him out of the market for an edge at number four in the draft. I think it helps maybe not pigeonhole them into that, right? We always talk about being flexible when the draft comes and doing things in free agency that doesn't force you to do something in the draft. You know, that helps achieve that, I would say. When you look at the fit, obviously, Robert Saleh was the head coach of the New York Jets when they drafted Jermaine Johnson. And he had a really nice, rookie season, if I recall correctly. The sack numbers weren't quite there, but he was getting a lot, he was creating a lot of pressure. It was sort of a frustrating instance for him that he wasn't finishing. Well, he did a lot better job of that as a sophomore. You've got the numbers up on the screen now. 7.5 sacks under Robert Saleh. Took that big step forward, you know, with Coach Bob as his head coach in year two. Well, year three rolls around and he tears his Achilles 2 games into the year, ironically, against the Tennessee Titans. I remember that happening really well. That was the second game of the Brian Callahan era where they lose to the Aaron Rodgers-led Jets. And by the way, of course, you know, Saleh was still the head coach. So he tears his Achilles in 2024. Saleh's fired a couple of games later, you know, into that year. He comes back in 2025. I'm not going to sugarcoat this, okay? And I think that's the part that the Titans, maybe Titans fans are ignoring a little bit. Wasn't very good. He wasn't very good this past year for the Jets. You've got the sack numbers up now, just 3 sacks in 14 games. He was struggling, you know, coming back from the Achilles, maybe not a shocker, right? Like it's a devastating injury. And it took a physical toll on him this past year. I think he was less explosive. You just saw a less productive version of Jermaine Johnson on the field this past year. I'm not shocked that the Jets were willing to trade him. He is entering the fifth and final year of his rookie contract, which means they had already executed the fifth-year option of his contract. And I know we're going to get into the numbers, what that means a little bit later. But he's a guy who was, you know, drafted by the previous regime. A lot of same things we could say about Tavondre Sweat, right? Drafted by the previous regime, coached by a previous head coach, in a contract year, coming off a down year. In fact, shout out to Will Lomas, who wrote a great article on Titans Eyes earlier this year saying, maybe the Titans are going to trade for Jermaine Johnson. I mean, he hit the nail on the head. Easy to connect those dots with Robert Saleh here. But I do think there's some risk here, you know, involved with, you know, the physical profile, having an Achilles in his past. You know, certainly, I just want to acknowledge that. Now, of course, what are the Titans banking on? He'll be another year removed from the Achilles. We've seen guys sometimes get better in year two when that's the case. And of course, they're banking on reuniting him with Coach Bob, who had him most productive than he ever was throughout the tenor of his Jets rookie deal. But I think pretending that there's, you know, not some risk here with a guy who's coming off a down year and is entering a contract year and has an Achilles in his past, you know, there's definitely some risk involved.
So my thoughts on that are, we always talk about this, when you're coming off an Achilles injury, it can take 2 seasons to get back to yourself. And 2024, he tore that Achilles, and 2025 was not really back to himself. Also, I mean, yeah, like you said, only played 14 games last year. The 2024 injury was devastating. Happened, like you said, you remember it happening. I remember it happening against the Titans in that game. But you come back now to 2026, looking ahead. Now you're 2 years removed from that injury. You're going to be back playing in a scheme that you were most comfortable and most productive playing in. 7.5 sacks here. I know some people have said he had 9 sacks that year. I'm going to assume those people are looking at the Pro Football Focus stats where they don't count half sacks. They just, every half or full sack is one sack. So that's the discrepancy, if you're wondering. He was 20th in the league in hurries as a sophomore player in 2023, according to the way PFF tracks them. He had a good season on a team that was rotating a lot of pass rushers in just his second year. I mean, he played a full-time role, but a full-time role in that defense meant that he was not always on the field. I do think he is a guy that lines up as a defensive end and rushes the passer or stops the run. You're not going to have him dropping back into coverage. He did have an interception in this 2023 season. If anyone remembers it, he like jumped at a screen pump fake. The quarterback then re-racked to throw the ball through the ball. Johnson somehow got his hands back in the throwing lane again, batted it in the air, and came down with the pick. It was a really incredible play. But I do think, you know, if Robert Saleh coached him in New York and then goes back to the 49ers, there's a report out there that the 49ers tried to trade for him at last year's trade deadline. They offered a third round pick, and the Jets said, we'll do it for a two. And the Niners said, he's not worth a two. And then he comes to Tennessee, Robert Saleh, and again, they're calling the Jets and saying, hey, give me Jermaine Johnson. Like, that to me is the biggest, like, I could be blind and try to watch Jermaine Johnson play. And it, like, none of that matters when you're telling me the head coach of the football team tried to trade for this guy last year after drafting him and coaching him in New York, and then he gets to Tennessee, and immediately one of the first things he does is trade for this guy. He clearly, that means something to me. He clearly wanted him, he clearly likes him, and he clearly has a vision for how to use him in this defense, a defense that needs edge rushers. I agree with you. I don't think this takes them out of Reuben Bain or anyone else this year at number four overall, because you, like you said, you needed two. Now, if they go sign a huge, highly priced free agent, then I think you're wondering, like, are they setting themselves up to take Jeremiah Love or Caleb Downs or somebody else? And that could be the plan because, like you said, it gives you the flexibility where you're not in dire need of adding a playmaking edge rusher. Now, I don't think Jermaine Johnson is like a premier. We know this. He's not a premier edge rusher. He could get to that point maybe down the line. I'm not going to project that. That seems optimistic in a foolish way, like a little naive way. But he's a solid player. He's going to be a good player. And I think with the hole at defensive tackle, we've already talked about this. John Franklin Myers, you thinking what I'm thinking. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind the Titans signed John Franklin Myers now. And I would say a duo of John Franklin Myers and Jermaine Johnson is better than a duo of John Franklin Myers and Tavondre Sweat, where you're wondering who's moving outside and inside. I know Franklin Myers can play sort of everywhere, but everyone's in their best spot with this version of it. And throw Jeffrey Simmons into the mix as well. I think it's a good move. It's a savvy move. You get a guy out of here that you don't think is a culture fit. You bring a guy in that the head coach clearly loves. How can anyone be upset with what the Titans have done? Last thing I'll say is hook 'em.
Quick shout out to Toe and Mo Fan here for the $10 super chat tip. Thank you so much. Sorry it took us a couple minutes to get to it, but we were on a roll there, you know, talking Jermaine Johnson. Yeah, I do think it's interesting that Robert Saleh had such conviction in making this move, right? Like tried to trade for him last year while he was struggling with the Jets, has obviously watched that tape of last season and still had enough conviction to make this move now. Now, here are some interesting numbers, like 14 games last year, we noted 3 sacks, only 6 quarterback hits. He admitted during the year that the performance wasn't up to his standard. This is from Rich over there at ESPN. But both Johnson and the team acknowledged that the Achilles probably affected his performance. I agree with this comment here from Rice School that Johnson is the wide nine rusher according to Gus Bradley's description of edges. And now, you know, you get into a speculative part here, but Reuben Bain will be the guy that rotates between the edges and the interior defensive line. Jermaine Johnson is definitely a wide nine rusher. If you are not familiar with his skill set, it's... at least it was before the Achilles. It's burst, it's first step explosiveness, it's speed off the edge. It's the prototypical profile of a wide nine edge rusher, and that is the role that I would project him to play here in Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And another question here, Justin. Should we go ahead and extend Johnson? Do you think the Titans get something done with him before the end, like before he hits free agency next year? In August, in February of next year, in February of this year, like, do you think that something happens here with Jermaine Johnson, or do you think they're going to want to see him play in a Titans uniform before they give him more money?
I do think they're probably going to want to see him play because it's really hard to figure out what his market value is. And to be honest with you, why would he want to sign an extension right now? I mean, other than the fact you've had a serious injury, and if you have another, you're going to really put yourself in a bind. But I would like to think his market value in terms of an extension is not all that high right now. He probably wants to play, you know, a year removed from the injury to see if he could, you know, play his way into a bigger contract. I'm going to take that question as an opportunity to discuss something that I did want to discuss about this move.
Another good question here before you get into it. Did we get draft capital too? Right now, the report is Tavondre Sweat for Jermaine Johnson. Now, sometimes that initial report will come out, and then an hour later, somebody will tweet the so and so is also receiving a pick and so and so. But I think we are clear of that point where if that was included in the trade, we would have heard about it by now. So I'm pretty sure it is a straight player for player.
Yeah, ESPN even put in their report the rare player for player trade. So there's nothing else here. I'm going to take that question as an opportunity to discuss the financials because I found it really interesting. It really just goes to show you how much conviction the Titans had in making this move. Now, I'm not saying they're definitely right, but this is another takeaway from it. Jermaine Johnson, 1 year left on his deal. It's the fifth year option, fully guaranteed $13.4 million, which means that's what it counts towards the salary cap. Now, the Titans have a lot of cap space, so it's by no means a significant blow to be taking on this contract. But in making this move, not only did they part with Tavondre Sweat, but they kind of parted with like $11 million in cap space and another year of team control of a team-friendly deal. Because while Johnson's on a contract year, Tavondre Sweat had two more years left on his deal. What's his cap hit this year? It's like under $2 million. So they're sacrificing $11 million in cap space by making this move and one extra year of control over the player that they had on Tavondre Sweat. So, I think tells you a lot about how they feel about Tavondre Sweat and probably tells you something about how they feel about Jermaine Johnson as well.
Yeah, and this is a great comment here. No way they extend Johnson before Skoronski. I agree. I'm of the opinion that you got to see him play before he signs. I mean, you're not going to give a guy money with this injury history now without seeing that he's back to himself or whatever you define as back to himself. Last thing on Johnson before we move on and talk about some other stuff.
This might be a silly, not a silly question. I guess if you don't know, you don't know. But the decision to pick up his fifth-year option was made by the Jets already, Blue Bomber. So the Titans inherit it. Like, they're inheriting the contract. He's already on the fifth-year contract this year. Titans agree to inherit it by trading for
him. Yeah, there was another question in here. What's the general feeling? From Fleety TV. The general feeling is this is a savvy, smart move to improve your team where you add a player at a massive position of need and you also get to get somebody out of your locker room that regardless of, you know, a lot of Titans fans like Tavondre Sweat because they see him play and they like him and he's big and he's athletic for his size and he's a monster of a human. And I went to Texas, so I'm biased towards him. But from everything we've heard and everything that has been reported since basically before he was even drafted, there are reasons to believe that he is not the best fit for the locker room of guys that Mike Borgonzi is trying to build, which is a group of guys who are so dedicated to the sport of football. They eat, sleep, drink, breathe football. All they do all day, every day is football. And for the record, Reuben Bain is that guy. He talked about it at his Combine presser yesterday. Justin, I have one more thing to talk about since I mentioned Reuben Bain, and we are live right now. Bain just measured. We got an arm length measurement for Reuben Bain, official at the Combine. 6'2", 263 pounds, 30 and 7/8 inch arms. Under 31, but well above 30. I don't think there's any surprise here, but this is kind of, it's out there now. We know, we have a definitive answer. There's no more speculation about what his arm length is.
No, I knew we knew that it was going to be sub 31. It's under 31. Now I'm going to give you some information on this. It's crazy, right? Aiden Hutchinson, he was going through the process, there was a lot of conversation about his arm length. They play the same position, right? Defensive end, edge, so it's a direct comparison. Aiden Hutchinson's was just over 32, Okay. Yeah. That was 7th percentile historically for edge rushers. This is 0 percentile. I mean, we knew it. It's not a surprise. I knew it was under 31. I called it. I think I called it sub 31 on yesterday's show. I think I did. We knew it was sub 31, so it's under that. You want to know what's kind of fun here? What was Roger McCreary's when he came out? Now Roger McCreary's was almost 29. So I mean, fair, still about a fair difference. I think about 2 inches longer. Yeah, 2 inches longer than Roger McCreary's, but. I still think that's pretty funny considering we always called McCreary T-Rex and he was at corner. So means a bit, I mean, it means
I disagree
a lot for different things, different reasons, in my opinion. It means a lot at corner, but it also means a lot at edge, you know, under 31. But listen, it is what it is. We knew it. I'm not changing anything about my opinion on Reuben Bain because it's exactly what I knew it was months ago.
And here's the thing. We're getting a little off topic, and I did want to hit some more of these questions in the chat because obviously we're live. People have joined a little bit late. Yangsy King asking, doesn't getting Johnson make it less likely we go edge at 4? I think it makes it slightly less likely. I think we need to wait and see what they do at free agency because I could imagine a defense that now has Jermaine Johnson, Jeffrey Simmons, John Franklin Myers, and Reuben Bain. That's a pretty good looking front four, I would say. This really helps the draft. They still need a lot of players, but the ideal situation for a GM is to be able to pick best player available. I've been saying this. Is Bain the next Donald or no? Justin, I think I did text you this like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I said, Reuben Bain is the Aaron Donald of defensive ends. Nobody wanted to draft Aaron Donald high because he didn't fit the body type profile of a great defensive tackle. Sort of changed the position almost, revealed that like, wow, being a little smaller, being lower to the ground gives you a little better leverage, actually. Now, I'm not saying that Reuben Bain is a future Hall of Famer, but I don't think he's being compared to Mike Tyson. Like, that's his NFL player comp now is Mike Tyson, who was not that long, but would get inside an opponent's body and chest and remove the advantage that the opponent had by having longer arms. I think Bain literally does the same thing to offensive tackles. He gets right up on you before you can even react.
I will say, so I don't think this takes the Titans out of the edge market at number 4 yet. But I will say it does make you feel like Reuben Bain is now a lot better fit than a David Bailey. Does it not? Like, David Bailey to me is that similar wide 9 profile. Who's a questionable run stopper, questionable run defender, totally different than Reuben Bain. And Jermaine Johnson is totally different than Reuben Bain. So for me, certainly feels more Bain than Bailey at number 4 now. But let's also acknowledge that. I mean, I think the Jets were probably always going to go edge rusher at number 2. But now they probably definitely are, right? Now that they've traded Jermaine Johnson. They've got Will McDonald and nothing else at edge. And the Titans have Jermaine Johnson and not a whole lot else either. Yeah, they got Femi, they got Jalen Harrell. But those are rotational guys as of now. They're not starting caliber players. So Jets are going to go edge at 2. That could impact, you know, what the Titans do it for. It could bite them in the butt, maybe even a little bit, right? But, you know, TBD. But I do think if I saw Caribbean Daniel make a comment in the chat. If they go out and sign another starting caliber edge at 4, in free agency, if they go pay, a Kwity Paye, for example, or a Boye Mafe or a Jalen Phillips, whatever, yeah, that might take them out of the edge market at 4, and that might set them up to go BPA, which could be Caleb Downs or Jeremiah Love. So it's going to be really interesting to follow along with free agency here. Got a question in the chat. I was just about to put that up about Jihad Ward. He's on an expiring contract, John. He's a pending free agent. I'd like to see the Titans re-sign him. He's a good rotational player, but as of now, he's not under contract with the Titans.
One last question I wanted to hit, and then we're going to move on. Sorry, everyone, but we do have a lot to talk about today. Daylon says, I think it shows even further that Saleh is going to go and get his guys to make this defense better. It's what he did in New York, and they made that D the best in the league. I think more moves to come. I totally agree. That's why I'm like going to go ahead and get my Sharpie out and write in John Franklin Myers to this Titans defense. I think between how the connection to Saleh and Aaron Whitecotton and Tanzel Smart and the Instagram post, it's like, is there a more obvious free agency fit in this entire league right now than John Franklin Myers to the Titans?
I also think, I know that he doesn't do the same things that T'Vondre Sweat does, But I do wonder if signing John Franklin Myers and re-signing Sebastian Joseph Day gives you, and Jeffrey Simmons is a good run defender, and Hayden Kyle here. I wonder if adding Franklin Myers and bringing Joseph Day back, who's a good run defender, had a primary run-stopping role for the Titans this past year, does that do enough in Robert Saleh's scheme to offset what you're losing in Tavondre Sweat as a run stopper? Because while neither player is a like-for-like replacement, they might not want a like-for-like replacement if they truly feel that Sweat wasn't a great fit for the defense. So maybe bringing in Franklin Myers and re-signing SG Day, Sebastian Joseph Day, is enough to help you, you know, make up for what you lost in the run-stopping department.
This is a good one, Justin. I know I said last question a second ago, and we're 30 minutes in, and we've talked about one topic, but this is breaking news, and it's a live stream. So Random from Two-Tone, at Two-Tone Blue Blood. Random, in discussions with the Jets, is there any way the Jets would tell the Titans which edge they like best, like a wink-wink part of the deal? Now, I think it's a little early for them to even know who, yeah, which edge they like best. They're going to be going through the process. They got combine formals this week. You're going to have private dinners, workouts, top 30 visits, and all that stuff. And you should take that time to decide before you make your decision, because the character, again, the reason Tavondre Sweat is not on the Titans, as far as I believe, the character matters more than just the tape. So I doubt that they've made up their mind. I will be mock drafting, and every mock draft I create from now until the draft, I will be putting not just my number one pick, Fernando Mendoza, the same in every draft. I will also now be putting Arvell Reese as the number two pick in every single draft that I do. Mock draft.
Well, it's funny. I do think the Jets are probably going to go Arvell Reese at number two, but I think... David Bailey's probably still in play there as well, and maybe Bain, although I don't know about, you know, with those arms, how the Jets will feel about that. But another thing, we talked about Robert Saleh building his defense. I mean, he goes and gets Jermaine Johnson, a guy that he's coached. We're projecting him to go get John Franklin Myers, a guy that he's coached. We've got Quincy Williams, a free agent linebacker who he's coached. A bunch of safeties, which we're going to talk about in a second, that he's coached. Like, it does feel like that they're interested in going out and getting a bunch of guys that he's coached on the defensive side.
Yep, and we're going to talk about some of that. Well, maybe one of those players, maybe, after the break here. If you're watching live, we're just going to keep on rolling. There's no break because we're live. But if you're listening to this on an audio platform, we will be taking a quick break, come back on the other side, and talk Titans cutting Lloyd Cushenberry and Xavier Woods. Stay right there. Welcome back. We're talking Titans cuts now, Justin. Titans cut late on Wednesday. So late that we had recorded the pod. I had edited most of the pod. And then while mid-edit, we find out Titans cut Lloyd Cushenberry. Titans cut Xavier Woods. I texted you. I'm like, are you available to retape some stuff? You're like, no, I'm not home anymore. Why would they make this move so late? I'm like, all right, fine. I'll tape like a little topper. It goes at the top of the show just to let people know that we're not stupid. We did not notice this happening, and that we did already record a different podcast. So I did a little addendum at the top. I talked about the cap savings that they could do, and then we got into yesterday's pod. But today, you and I can talk about what this really means for the team from a roster building standpoint. I have a lot of thoughts on this. This is going to be a longer live stream than it was planned to be, because we just did 30 minutes on Jermaine Johnson, and we already had an entire show planned for today. But it is what it is. It's that time of year. Justin, the Titans save a total of $7.2 million in cap space by cutting Lloyd Cushenberry and Xavier Woods. Neither player really gives them a ton of money individually. It's like 3.7, 3.8, and 3.4 respectively. But then you go trade for Jermaine Johnson. Like you said, you spend $11 million in cap space just like that by making that trade. Maybe, do you think the timing at least was connected? Like, because they could have done this next week in terms of the releases. Do you think there's any connection there, or they have so much cap space it doesn't matter?
I think they've got so much cap space that it doesn't matter, that they're not really linked. But look, you and I both speculated earlier this year, earlier this offseason, I should say, that Lloyd Cushenberry and Xavier Woods might be, you know, they were potential cap casualties. I will admit that, what spelling error is he talking about? I don't see.
Apparently there's an I in there in the lower bar, but you know what? That's why we're live, and you can fix things. So it
all
doesn't
good
matter.
I didn't think that either player was definitely going to be cut. I was a little surprised on the Cushenberry decision. But then we got word. I don't remember hearing this, that he underwent shoulder surgery this offseason already. And the Titans released him with a failed physical designation. It only saves about 3.5-ish million towards the cap, and it leaves them with $9 million in dead cap. So clearly they didn't think very highly of the player. Anytime you cut a player for under $4 million in cap space and take on a $9 million cap hit, dead cap, or you're willing to absorb that, you don't think highly of the player. Now, maybe, again, they felt they had no choice based on the failed physical designation, the shoulder surgery. But I do think this is a bit of a risky move because, I didn't think he was good last year, but I didn't think he was awful. I was kind of content rolling it back with him and saying, by the way, just like we're saying about Jermaine Johnson, that he's going to be another year removed from the Achilles injury in 2026, and maybe he'll be better than he was in 2025. Well, Titans obviously didn't care to think that. And again, the shoulder surgery might have made that null and void, essentially, that part of the potential thought process. But I think it's a bit of a risk here because I don't think there are many good centers in free agency, and I don't think there are any centers I'd be comfortable drafting and starting right away. So TBD on this. They might have felt like they had to do it after he undergoes surgery for a second straight off. It's an Achilles, now it's a shoulder. They might have felt they had to, but I don't think it's going to be straightforward, or the thought process to replace them. They don't have a ton of options.
So I have a different take on this. I think this is about value. And I think that I'm going to play a clip here in a second. Now, Mike Borgonzi and Robert Sala did a co-appearance on the Pat McAfee show yesterday. It's about 22 minutes long. The whole thing's on YouTube. I thought it was a fantastic interview with these two guys. One of the best public speaking platforms that either of these guys have appeared on. They did a little bit, but they didn't just go on there and repeat all the same things they've said to everybody else who's talked to them. Like the McAfee crew, I'm not a huge McAfee guy in general. That his energy is a little crazy for me to watch an entire show of. It's fun for clips, and it's fun when Aaron Rodgers goes and says something crazy, but I'm not a huge McAfee guy. But he did an incredible job with this interview of getting two guys who are, as we talked about on yesterday's, the whole point of yesterday's show is they don't say much. They're very cagey. They're very couching everything they say. They're very coach speak in all their answers. They're not revealing anything. I thought McAfee did a great job of sort of getting them to relax and open up and feel a little loose with all the just like funny, crazy energy of like former players. Like it's not the same as, talking to Tom Pelissero. Although Mike Borgonzi did tell a very funny story to Tom Pelissero yesterday when he said, Brian Daboll tried to convince me to pass on Cam Ward last year and now he gets to coach him. Anyway, all that to say, I think this is exactly the same situation as when they cut Harold Landry in terms of a player that they're paying a lot of money to, over $14 million a season to, who's just not living up to that contract. And that's the simple fact. And I understand the Achilles injury was a big deal and you're, another year removed from it and you're continuing to get healthier. But then, yes, the shoulder injury happens. But if we're being totally honest, like Cushenberry struggled for most of last season. He was the Titans' worst offensive lineman for most of the season. Corey Levin came in and the team, I wouldn't even say didn't miss a beat. I would say the team looked a little bit better when Corey Levin was playing. And we'll talk about whether or not Corey Levin is the answer in a second. That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is you removed Cushenberry and it didn't feel like there was a big hole in the middle of the offensive line. If anything, it felt like they're better right now than they were when Cushenberry was in there. So I think this is simply, and I agree with you, like $9 million dead cap to save $3 million. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. The dead cap would be like that cap space would be used on Cushenberry at $3 million more dollars, $12 million right, or whatever, if you, or 12.8 or something, if you didn't actually cut him. So you, yeah, but it is a big cap hit to take. It is a big dead cap hit, but still you save 3.8 or whatever million dollars. I think this is because they said this guy's just not as good as what we're paying. The same way Harold Landry wasn't quite the player who's being paid like a premium edge rusher. He's a good edge rusher, but he's not that level. And so we're getting him off the books. We didn't draft Lloyd Cushenberry, and Mike Borgonzi wants to build this team by drafting the players, and the foundation comes through the draft. And I think this is a really interesting and important philosophical team building point to get across, is that the best teams with sustained success, their best players come through the draft. And then you complement and supplement players in free agency. The guys you add in free agency are complementary to the players that you draft and develop as your cornerstones, your foundation, your real franchise. A free agent can put you over the top in one area where you need help, but the majority of your roster is got to be built through the draft if you want to compete for a long time. Look at the Washington Commanders, who everyone was using as the model for a quick turnaround two seasons ago. Look what happened last year. And my buddy Connor Orr, he had a great term for this. He called it a microwave rebuild, because they went out and they signed a bunch of old, aging veterans who could play well for 1 year, but were also injury prone. And also they weren't like homegrown talent. And when those guys are older, they start getting hurt and they're not going to develop on the same timeline as Jaden Daniels, and that whole Washington roster is thrown out of whack now. And you saw what happened to them last season. Like, the Titans aren't looking for a 1 year miracle run to the conference championship game followed up by lackluster disappointment year, right? They're looking to build a sustained success contender. And the way to do that is through the draft. Mike Borgonzi spoke about this, and I'm going to play the clip because I think it's really eye-opening as to his process, and also the acknowledgement that this might take more than one offseason.
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly going to attack both acquisition periods here. And I think that you have to stay disciplined to your process, too. You know, you're still trying to build a team in a locker room and a culture, and you do that through the draft. And we're certainly going to, you know, have our hand in free agency as well, too, here. And there's going to be some great opportunities to add some players in free agency. But really, through the draft is really where you have to build that foundation initially. And Robert's been through it before, and I've been through it in the past. And you want to build it right, you got to build it through the draft.
You want to build it right, you got to build it through the draft.
No doubt about that, for sure. But I just, listen, at center, I don't think they can afford to go into the season with the, you know, whether it's Jackson Slater or whether it's a drafted center. Like, you want to take another mid-round guy, develop him. I don't know what point you were trying to make here, I'll be honest with you, but I still think it's got to be a veteran, proven center to come into this lineup. It's too big of a risk to the offense, to Cam Ward's health and availability, like, and it's center. Who's the best center in this class? Do you know? Now, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just saying, like, it's not a really good class. There's a ton of mid-round guys that might, you know, third, fourth, fifth round type of players. You want to start a fourth round center this year when you're trying to turn this thing around? Like, they've got to do something at center, and it's got to include a veteran.
I don't want what I said to be misconstrued. I don't think that they should just plug Jackson Slater into the starting lineup and call it a day. I'm talking more about a roster building approach in general that differed vastly from Rand Carthon and can hint at what their approach in free agency might look like. I still think there will be one Dan Moore level signing, a big time name, a top near top of the market type of guy that patches an immediate need. And then you maybe draft someone for the long term to develop in that spot. And that could be next year or the year after that, because depending on how young the player you sign is and how many years you sign him to. Like Dan Moore, like, they're not drafting a left tackle this year, most likely. I mean, maybe they will, but I'm not expecting them to. They didn't do it last year, because Dan Moore is good enough to fill that spot for at least these 2 years. And maybe next year you look at replacing him with a young draft pick that you try to develop. But when it comes to the center position right now, I agree with you. I do think they're going to sign somebody to fill this spot. I don't think it's a very smart roster building strategy to re-sign Corey Levin and let him and Jackson Slater battle it out for the starting center job, because then you could be in a position where the guy that wins that job may have won the job, but is he a starting level center in the NFL? I mean, Corey Levin has been in the league for what, 8 years, and he's never won a starting job. He started games in spot duty and performed really well in those spots. He is a high quality backup offensive lineman. Those guys are important because players get hurt every year, and you need to be able to insert somebody into the lineup that isn't going to kill you. But he's not a starting level player. So my point was more about, like, why Cushenberry got cut. It was related to performance and related to the contract that he was being paid for his performance, and that in the long run, the Titans are going to be looking to build everything they do, the best players through the draft, not signing guys to massive contracts. So all that to say, like, a lot of Titans fans have pivoted and been like, oh, we got to go get Tyler Linderbaum now. Tyler Linderbaum's the best center on the market. You give him whatever he wants, $23 million a year, pay him like a tackle, and just fix that position and don't think about it. Well, first of all, I think the Ravens are going to give him a market-setting deal. I mean, their GM went to the podium on Tuesday and said, we have a market-setting offer on the table for him right now already. So I do think that that's going to end up happening. I mean, if you're Tyler Linderbaum, you have the chance to go back to playing for a world-class organization with a two-time MVP quarterback and a new head coach that everyone in the organization is excited about. Like, I feel like he would pick that over, I'm going to go rebuild with the Titans. Like, I don't think, I mean, that's just me. If they offer him more money, you never know, but I don't think that they want to lose. They don't want to lose Linderbaum. So they're going to pay him what he wants. I'll pause down real quick just to answer this. Woodrin, the Pootie 696. Thank you for the super chat. Titans will get a fifth year on Johnson, right? Yes, that is this season. The 2026 season is the fifth year option. Johnson will play under that option. But back to the center position, let's take a look at the free agent center market, because there's a few guys that when Tyler Linderbaum signs with the Ravens and everyone panics, there are other guys on the market that I think you could get away with playing that the Titans are going to have their eye on. So this is kind of small. I apologize if you're watching this on YouTube. You might have to get close to your screen here, but I did not sort this by market value. Maybe that was a mistake. Connor McGovern is projected for a $16 million contract. Cade Mays projected for a $12 million contract. Obviously, Linderbaum is the top of the market guy. There's enough names on this list that I think you could feel good about. You know what I mean?
I mean, there's like three for me, to be honest with you. There's three. And that includes Tyler Linderbaum, though. So there might only be two. It's Cade Mays and Connor McGovern. I think those are the only two outside of Linderbaum that are good, you know, high-end centers in free agency. And I think the Titans probably do got to sign one of those three. And if they decide to blow the bank on Linderbaum, I'll be a little surprised, but I won't be disappointed, because I'm worried about how they're going to attack this position. Because I don't think they've got a lot of options. They almost certainly have to sign one of those three players. And I like what you said about Corey Levin, because I couldn't believe the amount of Titans fans on Twitter yesterday just getting ready to re-sign Levin and put him in the starting lineup. What did I'm not to pat myself on the back, but remember what I told you about Xavier Woods a couple weeks ago? Not to bring it up now. I'm not trying to rub it in, but I said, aim higher, right? Like, stop just settling. Back-to-back 3-14 seasons. We got to aim higher. And we got to aim higher than Corey Levin. Not a starting caliber center. He's never been considered that at the NFL level by anybody or any team that he's ever played for. Shout out to College Boy / XL7EL. Stopped what I was doing for the Justins at MCA. You guys kill it. A super generous $20 super chat tip. I'm going to guess, College Boy, that you are a liar, because no College Boy has enough disposable income to throw $20 our way here on the MCA live stream. We thank you so much for the generosity. That's a really awesome super chat tip. Thank you so much for that. Aim higher than Corey Levin. I saw Graver's face too, Jacob. Aim higher. Bring him back. He's a really good backup center. Good backup guard. A good backup reserve interior lineman. But I think they've got to go get one of Linderbaum, McGovern, or Mays in free agency.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are the guys in, like, the next tier down from that as well, like a James Daniels, Ethan Pochich. You don't like those guys, Austin Corbett. I mean, these are guys that have been starters in the league.
I think they're just kind of, give me McGovern or Mays if it's not Linderbaum. I'll leave. And there are some, like, I saw a comment in the chat about Logan Jones from Iowa. Might be the best pure center in this class. Probably going to have freakish athletic numbers from what I'm hearing at the combine this weekend. Sam Heck, Kansas State. Connor Liu out of Auburn, although he tore his ACL this past year. Trey Zune out of Texas A&M is going to be moving to center from what I understand. So there are Brian Parker out of Duke I really like. There are some guys, mid-round guys in the center class, but no way I'm starting one of these mid-round centers or Corey Levin or Jackson Slater. Give me a surefire upgrade.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. And I think that they, like, I don't think it's going to be difficult to upgrade from the level of play that Cushenberry was giving you, is my point. I think that he was struggling more than Titans fans wanted to admit because they paid him a lot of money and he was really good in Denver. He was not good for the Titans. He was never really good for the Titans.
And so, I always say, do you remember me saying on this show, he was playing poorly before he tore his Achilles, like when he made his debut. And you could chalk that up a little to, you know, a new team, new scheme. We're talking about the first couple games of his tenure, right? Because he tore it midway through his first year, but he wasn't playing very good before he tore it.
Yeah, and Linderbaum's the best, one of, if not the best center in the NFL right now, so he's going to get paid like it. I wouldn't be mad if the Titans did it. I just don't see it happening. Maybe he's this year's Dan Moore. And then what? You're going to have $20-plus million a year committed to Dan Moore. You're going to sign Skoronski to, what, $20, $22 million a year here in the next few days. You're going to give Linderbaum $23 million a year, which is what the tag number would be for him. Like, are you going to just pay that much money to your offensive line? J.C. Latham's a year or two away from being extension eligible. Are you going to bring Zeitler back for another $9 million? Like, what, you're going to sink $100 million into the offensive line? Like, you can't put all, I mean, obviously it's an important position group, but you can't put all your resources there, even if you do have the rookie quarterback. Now you can save a lot more money if you cut Calvin Ridley and L'Jarius Sneed, but you know, that's neither here nor there. The Titans also did cut Xavier Woods. We barely talked about that. Now, here's what I'll say about these cuts, Justin, is that I've done like probably 40 iterations of stick to the model Titans offseason, mock offseason, that tool that came out literally the day we did our mock offseason live stream, like later that day. This tool is everywhere on Twitter as a new announcement. Stick to the model. If you guys haven't played with it, just Google it. All one word, stick to the model. You'll find it instantly. It's really cool. Really nice thing to be able to see like what the Titans could do with all their cap space and everything. And there's even a mock draft function in there. In every iteration, just about every single iteration I've done, Justin, I have cut Lloyd Cushenberry and Xavier Woods. So like, to me, this is the smart thing. These are the smart moves to make to begin with the roster rebuilding process. Now, Xavier Woods, you know, you draft Kevin Winston Jr. in the third round last year. You gave Imani Hooker an extension last August. Xavier Woods was expendable. As you said, he's sort of an aim higher guy. Like, he was a stopgap signing because they just needed a body that you could put in a starting lineup and not, again, not get killed. But he's not a high quality, high level contributor. He missed a tackle on one play that ended up going for like a 60-yard touchdown last year, if I remember correctly. Where he just
that was the Puka Nacua in the backfield on the fourth and one end around or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. So who knows what they do there? There are safeties they could add. There's a safety that has played for Sala that they could add that I'll let you talk about because I'd be stealing that from what you said in the chat, in our group chat, a different place here. So I'm not going to say it. I'll let you say it. But there are players that they could add here. There's also the obvious Caleb Downs. Now, I'm not saying that this means they're drafting Caleb Downs because they cut a backup safety, obviously. But I do think that, you know, the door's open as it's ever been. You trade for an edge, you cut a safety. Like, I'm not ruling it out. I said it yesterday. Like, I still think we all agree he's the best player in the draft. I think at a certain point, positional value matters. But when you're talking about a possible Hall of Fame level player, or at very least like a true blue chip player, when there are maybe only two true blue chip players in this draft, and those to me would be Caleb Downs and Jeremiah Love, that positional value, who cares? Draft the best players. The Titans' biggest need, everyone wants to say the Titans' biggest needs are wide receiver and corner and edge. No, the Titans' biggest need is good football players because they don't have enough of them. That's what their biggest need is. And Caleb Downs is going to be a good football player. He's like the easiest eval in this whole draft class. There's like, I just don't see any way that he isn't amazing. Top three safety in the league from like day, maybe week five, once he gets his feet under him, maybe sooner than that. So I'd be all in on that. But there are also some free agent safeties we could talk about. I don't think cutting Xavier Woods, though, was a surprise. I do think the timing was a surprise because I was expecting all these moves to start next week. But it's not a surprise to see him cut from this roster.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's a very good football player. I think he's kind of the definition of average. Again, they save $3 million by cutting him. Like, it's anytime you cut a guy to save $3 million, I think speaks volumes of your opinion of the player. I do think it creates a minor hole at safety because your two starters, we knew this, Imani Hooker, Kevin Winston Jr., both somewhat injury prone, right? And plus, defenses nowadays, three safety looks. Sometimes you want to have three of them on the field. So sometimes you want to have them on the field all the time, right? That's what a lot of defenses are doing nowadays. Titans don't have a third safety that could do that. They don't even have one who could be a really good backup, for example, sort of a backup starting caliber player if one of the injury-prone safeties gets hurt. So I do think they're going to sign a safety in free agency. There are a ton of, you know, reserve types that are familiar with this defense. Mike Herndon mentioned Jason Pinnock in our chat that I think played for Robert Saleh for a while, but then also played, I think, with Brian Daboll in between in the Giants. So there's a lot of connections there. I think Tony Adams and Chuck Clark are also both free agents. Saleh had them both in New York with the Jets. So I think there's three natural fits there, and they all kind of fit the, you know, not really a starting caliber player at this point, but could be a number three, more so if you're looking for like a backup in case of injury. I wouldn't be comfortable with one of them being like an every down kind of number three safety, to be honest with you. But if you're just looking for depth, I think those three fit the bill due to the familiarity they have in this scheme.
And just like a fun little, this is funny to me, but we look at this, maybe this is a timing thing, but you're looking at this list of free agents and it's sorted by 2025 average annual value of their contract. And Xavier Woods was like, what was he like, the 10th highest paid safety that is going to be on the market now last year. And he's the only one that doesn't have a market value projection from Spotrac. Now, maybe that's just because he was just cut and they haven't had time to do that. But I feel like there's like an algorithm that creates that more than like an actual human. Maybe I'm wrong. But so I think that that would mean he's not like going to get paid highly enough for them to do a market value projection for him. And yet here he was like the 10th highest paid safety that's hitting the market now for next year. I think Kevin Byard is interesting. Bring him home. The mayor of Murfreesboro. Another guy that went to the same school, Reed Blankenship, hitting the market. Is he a guy you bring back to Middle Tennessee? I don't know, but there's definitely some options there. Before we move on to our last topic, there's a few comments in the chat that stood out to me here that I want to kind of address. Blue Bomber says, does Saleh value safeties that much? Caribbean Daniel says, Saleh never invests in safety, least important position in his defense. Well, I'll give two examples. Earl Thomas was a safety with the Seattle Seahawks that was pretty dang good. And Saleh got to see that how important that safety that can be the best safety in football, which Earl Thomas was at the time, what that unlocks for your defense. Because the Legion of Boom was not the Legion of Boom if they didn't have that guy roaming the back end of it. So I think Saleh has been around a high premium player at the safety position there and understands what that kind of player can do for your defense. Talanoa Hufanga wasn't drafted very particularly high, but quickly became one of the best safeties in the league, right? I mean, he saw that happen. And then a safety at four is Rich. I mean, yeah, it is Rich when you talk about positional value. But Justin, do you know what draft slot Eric Berry was drafted at? Do you know what pick number Eric Berry was drafted at?
I don't.
2010, Mike Borgonzi is in Kansas City as I think like assistant player to, he was in a front office role, but not a super high ranking one, obviously, back in 2010. The Chiefs draft Eric Berry, number 5 overall. Do you know who Caleb Downs, like most common, if you just Google search Caleb Downs player comp is? It's Eric Berry. So look, if Mike Borgonzi's like, hey, this guy reminds me of someone that my organization drafted at number 5 overall not too long ago. I mean, I guess 16 years ago now. And it worked out pretty dang well. And this guy reminds me of him. And we could like there's not another player in this draft that we would deem in a vacuum to be better than him. Maybe positional value is more important, but it's in terms of pure as a player, who's better than him? I'm going to keep making the case for Caleb Downs until draft night, and I hope you guys are ready for it because I'm going to keep doing it. But obviously, I'm in the boat right now where I'm like, if they take Reuben Bain or Caleb Downs or Jeremiah Love or Arvell Reese, if he makes it, I'm happy. If they take anyone else, I'm going to have to get convinced to be on board. And that's where I'm at. And Justin, do you have anything else you want to say on these cuts before we get to our last segment?
No, I think I'll just say again, the Jermaine Johnson trade maybe gives them a little more flexibility, just a little bit more, not a lot more, but a little bit more to consider someone like Downs or Love at number 4.
Right. So, all right, that'll do it for this part of the conversation. We have one more thing to talk about. We talked about it when it happened, when the billboard was released on Monday, and we said season ticket holders are going to be getting an email soon with more details. Season ticket holders got that email. If you're listening on audio, we'll talk about that right after this break. Welcome back. Titans rebrand? Is that what we're calling it, Justin? Logo reveal? Uniform reveal? I think rebrand works pretty well. Here is the email that season ticket holders received. Join us at the Pinnacle on March 12th for a special event celebrating the next chapter of the Tennessee Titans. Tickets will be available today at 10 a.m. Central. That was 41 minutes ago. Your ticket claim link will hit your inbox tomorrow morning. That would have been yesterday morning. All tickets are free. Standing room only, limited to 2 per PSL account on a first-come, first-served basis. Tickets are non-transferable. All right, here's the it's the same image that was printed on the billboard at the top of this little email here. March 12th. Justin, before I go further, I have something else I wanted to put on screen, and somebody has already said it in the chat about an hour ago. Not an hour, because we are an hour, right? I'm about to cross an hour, but you know what I mean. March 12th is the day after the new league year starts, Justin. That's the Thursday of free agency week. It's 2 weeks from today. What the heck? Aren't we going to have enough to talk about on the Thursday after free agency opens? Like, give me a break with this timing. What are they doing?
Not if they don't sign anyone, which is what they typically do in the first and second day, and everyone loses their minds. Yeah, I'm surprised about the timing a little bit. I think so close to free agency is shocking. But, I mean, listen, selfishly, I'm really excited to see them. So sooner the better in my book. But, yeah, the whole thing feels... So like last time there was a huge event on Broadway, you know, now it's a standing only venue that capacity is only a little over 4,500 people, I believe is the capacity, standing room only. So definitely a different vibe for this quote unquote reveal. See the question, DJ Silent in the chat, 3 p.m. today, combine workouts.
3 p.m. Eastern.
Measurements are going on now, but 3 p.m.
Eastern.
You mentioned, so 3 p.m. Eastern, yeah, 2 p.m. Central.
Is he talking to you or me, Justin? I tweeted about this, DJ Silent.
I don't know. I don't remember seeing the tweet, but my mentions have been blowing up all morning. So there's a chance that I missed it. Go ahead and let us know, DJ Silent. Let us know in the chat what you're referring to.
No, they didn't use the draft stage because the uniform reveal was in 2018 and the draft was in Nashville in 2019. So that wasn't the same.
Yeah, the uniform reveal helped them land the draft because of how big of an event it was, right? Like it was such a success. The NFL took notice and was part of the reason that they gave them the draft.
Yeah, exactly. So the other thing that's connected to all this is earlier this week on the Pat McAfee show, he was talking about teams with the most cap space, and they put up all 32 teams and how much cap space they have. And a lot of people caught this and posted it all over Twitter, and it's kind of eye-opening and a little bit weird that Pat McAfee has a different logo. I mean, now we've seen this logo. We saw it leaked on a plush football toy thing that was very odd looking toy. I don't know who would ever buy that particular item, but it was leaked from Fanatics. Good job, Fanatics, and all the speculation running rampant. And then we get this tease, the billboard tease, and you're like, oh, so the stars are going to be dark and the navy blue is still incorporated. So maybe we had the logo shape right because we saw it at the Titans house and we've seen it in a few places. It's on the floor of like a building, at least it was like 5 years ago on the floor of a building that is no longer on the floor of that building. Paul Kaharsky wrote a story on that. But then Pat McAfee goes out and here it is. That's the new logo we've been seeing as a leak everywhere. And McAfee's just using it as if it is the Titans logo. No mention of it, no addressing that. Hey, the Titans, look at that Titans logo. Is like, did the Titans, in preparation for this March 12th event, send out their logo to the media companies like ESPN, NFL Network, Fox Sports, CBS, NBC, all the places that show football stuff, Amazon Prime, I guess, Netflix, whatever, and say, hey, we're going to be unveiling a new logo, getting it to you now so you can get it in for your graphics and everything 2 weeks from today, or 2 weeks from today now. I guess it would have been not 2 weeks from today. You get my point. And McAfee's producers were like, oh, make sure we get that new Titans logo in there, and just like didn't realize that it hadn't been revealed or announced yet. Or is this some other weird, like they're just like trying to be inside, like online, like we know what's going on online and we know there's these rumors about this logo, so we're going to like have some fun with it. I think this is the Titans new logo. I think that the McAfee producers messed up and it's here and it's in the show and it is what it is. And like then we were getting our first real look at how it's going to be used and how it's going to look in graphics like this. And I think it's really interesting and weird that it was just on the McAfee show like this.
Yeah. I mean, TBD, but is it a mistake by the intern? Is it a cheeky joke? Are they getting ahead of it? Who knows? It sounds like Borgonzi, you know, shared a laugh about it, but excited about the event 2 weeks from today. Like you said, I hope selfishly they just reveal everything. Here's the logo. Here's the jersey. I'm dying to see it all. Can't wait to buy a new jersey. A Cam Ward jersey, of course. I've literally been waiting to get my hands on that one. So
Blue Bomber says, points this out, and I noticed this too. So the LA Rams, like our buddy Zach Cohen, who was on the show to talk about the Titans uniforms, has done some reporting and digging and found out that the Rams will be removing the gradient from their logo. If you look at the Rams logo on screen here, it goes from white to yellow. They're going to be removing that. It's going to be all one color now. I'm not sure which color, but the Rams logo is still the old Rams logo here. Right. So is it because the Titans are doing this on March 12th that they've already sent their new logo to the media companies who need to use it? And that, and the Rams, who knows when they're unveiling their new logo? Maybe it's later in the process or later in the offseason. And so they're not sending it out yet. And that's why the Rams old logo is. We're really getting into conspiracy theories here because we honestly have no idea. I can't wait to here we go. This is a great question from Kitty Cat Jones. Graver would know more about this than me. Who makes these graphics? Why would they have it set up like that if it's not real? So I could speak to this. Look, I worked at NFL Network, Fox Sports. I've been in these rooms where they make the graphics before the show. I've sent graphic requests to people. I've built them myself. The way it works is basically you have like a library of team logos, and that library gets updated by the design team at the instruction of higher level producers, sometimes executive producers, sometimes segment producers. Sometimes it's just like the department head that oversees it or the graphics department head oversees it. And they're always up to date. And there's like meetings once a week, especially when things are changing. And then a BA will make this. A BA is, I can't even remember what it stands for, but I know that that's the person who runs the graphics live during a show like this. They're the ones pressing the buttons, and or sometimes it's the director or the line cut director, the line director who's pressing the different buttons to like change the camera angles and put up graphics and things like that. But usually it's a BA, and usually the BA or a designer will build the graphic. Maybe a still graphic like this one, I would actually think that someone on a design team would make, because it's such a big graphic. It's not a motion graphic. It's not a lower third graphic. This feels like something a design team would make, which means it would probably get some oversight. And also, can I talk about just like something that bothers me a lot, that this graphic goes from left to right? Like, who would build a graphic like that? Who would build a numerical graphic like this and sort it from left to right, like in rows, instead of just sorting it by column? Like, that's idiotic to me. It's backwards. So maybe this is just not a very good graphics team making this stuff. And maybe they saw the leaked logo and thought it'd be fun to put in here. But I will say, like, if this is the ESPN library of graphics that they're pulling it from, there's a very good chance that it's the real logo, and that whoever did this, like, that there are currently two folders for the Titans, or two logos in a folder for the Titans, and one is marked like do not use before March 12th or something, and somebody didn't see that and nobody caught it. That's my guess as to how this happened, from having literally worked in the rooms where these kinds of graphics are built.
I'll take your word for it. You've been in those rooms. I haven't. But again, 2 weeks away, you know, from the reveal. Excited to see it.
All right. Anything else we want to hit? Any new questions come in while I was going on a 5-minute spiel about logos? Like,
how do you want to end this? We've been here for about 65 minutes talking to Vondre Sweat trade, Lloyd Cushenberry, Xavier Woods, all that good stuff. We'll be back tomorrow with another live stream. Look at you. You are pretty lucky. Two live streams, back-to-back days. I was literally taking a break from work when the trade broke. So I had to kind of, what? They did what? I actually got a message from someone first before I saw it, and then had to jump right back into, obviously, onto the computer and go back to work here. And I wrote a story and then come on here. And now I'm going to go write more stories. A lot of work to do, especially with the combine today. So we'll see you guys at the live stream tomorrow, 10:30 a.m. Central, 11:30 Eastern. Talk more Tennessee Titans. Maybe they'll cut more players. Maybe they'll trade more players. We'll have some more combine stuff to get into as well. Lots to talk about. Shout out to Nighttime Visions for beating the buzzer on the super chat tip. $5. Looks like a hungover intern made that whole mock-up. We tend to agree. Thank you so much for the tip.
Don't forget to like the stream and leave a comment on the real video after the stream ends. Wait till the stream is totally over and then scroll down a little bit and type in a comment that says, "We love Justin," and don't tell us which one you're talking about.
Don't tell us which one. You love us both. That's the way you should. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you guys are there. 10:30 a.m. Central on the stream. Till then, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.